Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, hope you guys found something to do that was fun on Saturday night week.
Man, I was going to do this Facebook Live recap shit, and all of a sudden, like, I didn't do any of that. I just kind of hung around the comments for like 20 minutes. I saw that everybody was angry, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go turn on some USC Stanford pregame. I'm gonna get some dinner, and I'm just gonna walk the F away from this.
Yeah, it wasn't the most fun game, and I like honestly rarely get like, I get upset by losses, but I shake them off pretty quickly at this point of my Syracuse fandom. That was one that really stuck with me for a while.
Yeah, that's the thing, like, my wife was like, you're not yelling. I'm like, no, to be honest, I was just, like, upset.
Like, I'm more disappointed.
Yeah, like, that's what it was. Like, I was disappointed and, like, upset. Like, I was kind of, like, despondent. It's just like, God damn it. Like of course this happened. And, like, I told myself it was going to happen around, like, the end of the third quarter. So then, like, once that's kind of my coping mechanism as a fan, as you are also a fan of teams that let you down repeatedly. I feel that by telling myself beforehand that we're going to lose when it happens, I don't have that, like, explosive outburst of, God damn it, this happened. But if we win, then I get to have, like, an emotional resurgence that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah, and it did feel like for a while there we would escape, I thought. It just seemed like a game where we could just put together a drive finally and figure it out and get there, and we just back into the fourth quarter we just totally fell apart, and it became very obvious that that team, especially Schaefer, had our number. And it's unfortunate because I thought there was, if you like peel away like the awfulness of losing to a Conference USA team at home and what a setback it felt like as just a general thing, like I thought there were things to like about the game, especially on the defensive side, but it just was so brutal to watch offensively and just the impending, like, creeping dread of, oh, this is absolutely going to be a loss was not fun to deal with again. Just, like, most of our losses, like, have been pretty apparent from the start in the last couple of years, or, like, we expected them going in, and even if we kept it close, at least, you know, we were keeping it close and not the other way around. This was one that we, you know, didn't really feel like ones that we've had in the recent years.
Yeah, I think that's really what it is. Like, the last game I can remember like this, maybe the Minnesota game in like 2009, like Marone's first game, or maybe it was just the Northwestern game in 2012. Like, those two games would be like the only ones, like, of even recent vintage that like I can like compare to it.
Yeah, and even those, like Northwestern, obviously I think we ended up being a better team that year, but at least they were like a comparable program. And Minnesota, obviously, we handed that game away, but, like, same thing, and also it was, you know, our coach's first game, so you can kind of excuse, you know, a fumble, a snap over someone's head on the first play. I mean, you know, excuse it, but you get where it's happening. While this is like, oh, we're kind of approaching that magical year-and-a-half mark where everything's supposed to, obviously, we don't expect that, you know, we're not turning to national champions right at that, you know, 6-10 of this season, but we're approaching that mark where everything's supposed to click, and this was probably the worst offensive performance of the Dino Babers era, when with regard to like opponent and all, you know, context taken into account.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is another case of, we've discussed this before, like, of how, you know, when something happens, not if something happens, is really what dictates the reaction to it. Like, if Doug Marone had gone, you know, 4-8. 5-7, and then 2 straight 8-5 seasons, like, the people that are still kind of anti-Marone would be a little more okay with that linear progression. If Schaefer had basically flipped the script on how he went and gone like 3-9, 4-8, 7-6, he'd still be here. Like, Babers pulling off the Virginia Tech win in year one and then losing to Middle Tennessee in year two, if those results are flipped, you're fine with them. But because of when the Middle Tennessee game happened, when a lot of people have convinced themselves into things that this program was never really capable of this year, that's how you get this kind of, you know, explosion of real emotional reactions and a lot of overreactions. I mean, there's plenty of fans who are completely reasonable and understanding, but to see the amount of folks like checking out of this season already at 101 and just completely done. I mean, I said it in that piece on Sunday where it, like, if you're already out on this season, like you were never in, and that doesn't mean you can't question Dino or question the offense. Cause like I said, I watched the game twice this week and it was unpleasant the second time, but I did glean some positives from it just the same. But like, yeah, if you're done with this regime, if you're done with this team this year, then you never gave a shit to begin with.
Yeah, and what I was trying to say after the game was, while this was awful, like, coaches are allowed really bad losses. Like, you can't just bury someone on their first bad loss. Like, if we're going to go, I'm going to look up Schaefer's first year.
I can, like, think of a game.
Yeah. The Georgia Tech game was a lot worse than this, and I don't even remember if he had a bad loss before that, but, like, we weren't saying fire Scott Schaefer after the Georgia Tech game. Like, we weren't even close. It took, like, a number of those type of losses. This was the first one for Dino, and it was honestly, like, I think the fear is that this game kind of exposed the offense or showed, you know, put you a blueprint for what defenses can do to disrupt it by sending, like, Schaefer-esque blitzes, but at the same time, like, college football teams, while they might try to glean something from what Middle Tennessee did, like, if that's not part of their DNA, they're probably not going to go all out with it. So, and, you know, while I do think Schaefer's a very good defensive coordinator, and I appreciate, you know, what he did here in that role, it's not, you know, there were far better defensive coordinators last year who didn't, Bud Foster comes to mind, who we beat, who didn't figure out the same thing and you know, didn't drop the blueprint to beating Dino's offense. So, like, this might be a you know, the type of game that ends up derailing us for a bit, but it also should just be a blip. So I'm trying to stay, like, sane about it. It was an awful loss, and I was right there with, like, everyone in terms of freaking out about it. But we have to move on. Like, you can't just bury a coach, any coach, after one bad loss. We didn't do it with Schaefer. We didn't do it with Marone. I wasn't around at the beginning of G-Rob, but, like, we probably had 7 in the first year that we could have done it for, and we didn't, and that was fair. So let's hopefully, like, regain our composure as a fan base and move forward.
Yeah, I mean, if Scott Schaefer's allowed to, like, skate after barely beating Villanova, I think that Dino Babers is allowed to move on, you know, issue free and with minimal, you know, serious questioning right now. When he was really a couple of drop passes or an actually called interception away from winning this game anyway.
And you know, obviously I'm not trying to, like, sugarcoat it, but, like, Middle Tennessee is a pretty good team. Like, they're not great. It's not, it wasn't Tennessee, or, you know, obviously it wasn't Vanderbilt even, but, like, Middle Tennessee is a quality Conference USA opponent, and heading into the year, like, I had a bad feeling about the team, and a lot of those bad feelings were quelled when Vandy kind of, you know, took them behind the shed, but it's still a pretty strong Conference USA program that wins, like, 8 or 9 games a lot of the time, so we didn't lose to Akron again. Like, we lost to an opponent that probably wasn't as overmatched as we like to think, and that obviously played with a magnitude greater level of aggression than you'd probably get from a normal team, and I think we'll probably get into that. There were a lot of factors that made this game not quite as easy as, you know, the average, like, oh, you're bringing, you know, whatever group of 5 team to the dome, like even next week, Central Michigan to the dome. This game had a lot of extra baggage to it, and clearly that did play some factor, even if it's not a legitimate excuse to say, you know, this is why Syracuse lost.
Yeah, I mean, that's what stunned me, I think, afterward, was how quickly context and the circumstances were thrown out the window. I mean, you know, we said before the game that, like, Scott Schaefer adds another wrinkle that you really can't account for. It's a variable that you can't put on paper, and obviously that variable was cashed in and then some. In this game, I think you can't discount how good MTSU is as a program. As you mentioned, I think you can't discount the aggression that defense played with. I mentioned in the Dungy piece today, like, that they came after him with a viciousness that, like, you know, is part of the game of football, but you just don't see it a ton consistently. And, like, they really came after him. I mean, I was a little annoyed by how much he was hit after the whistle and after the play was over. And I think that's something that hopefully referees can address for Dungy going forward, because I don't think it's fair to him if he's going to try to play safe that he's still getting nailed. But that's a whole nother conversation. In general, like, there's a lot of folks who seem like they completely forgot the lessons of the Greg Robinson era and just how far those depths were. Again, like you said, Babers is allowed to have a bad loss. And to me, if this is the worst loss he suffers, and again, a loss that he almost didn't suffer at all, I'm pretty okay with it. And I'm echoing you. Like, I don't want to sugarcoat this. This was a bad game. The offensive game plan was terrible, and really didn't have a counterpunch, to Scott Schaefer in the chess match that Babers had previewed before the game. But you learn from it, and hopefully we're able to go back to the drawing board on a couple things and address some of the glaring issues that we're going to get into during this episode.
Yep, and luckily we don't jump right into LSU. We do have Central Michigan, which, while I think actually is exactly one spot higher in Bill Donnelly's S&P from MTSU, that obviously doesn't mean like a whole lot yet. We're only 2 weeks in. I think Central Michigan is probably a lesser team. They were picked to finish fifth in the MAC West, I believe they were in, or are in. If we get a battle from the Chippewas, then I think it's legitimate cause for concern. If we go drop 45 in the Chippewas and win by 3 touchdowns, and it seems like we figure stuff out, I'll feel, I don't think we're going to beat LSU, but I'll feel more like this was maybe a blip, and it, not a foreboding sign of things to come.
Oh, I still think LSU and Clemson in particular are going to thrash us. I mean, based
I totally believe that.
This offensive line's not getting fixed. Yeah. This offensive line's not getting fixed. We were panicked a little bit when Aaron Roberts went out during the summer, and ends up that his absence actually created a bigger vacuum than we even realized. I know, Steve Haller was going through some of the video. I went through some of the tape last night while I was rewatching the game, and like, Cervais just blown up all the time. Adams to a point too. Like, this line can't really do much against a blitz, and like, even less than last year, maybe. And to me, that's horrifying given how much fire Dungy was under for much of the year.
Yeah, and what was also disconcerting is, and I think it's natural. It's part of like the reason you send blitzes like that. But Dungy's rhythm just got thrown off so totally. Like, this should be an offense that can counter like a 7-man rush pretty well because you have so many quick hitter options. Irv Phillips, like, this should have been a game where Irv Phillips was targeted 15 times and was just picking up 12-yard chunks because Schaefer was sending linebackers all over the place. Instead, Dungy locked in on Ishmael pretty much, like, I think he had more than half our targets. He just locked in on one guy. He got nervous. His timing was thrown off. He was totally rattled. And I get that. Like, there were even times where the pocket was held up and there was, integrity there, and Dungy got happy feet. And it's because, when you're getting such an onslaught the whole game, even the plays that are clean, unless you're, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, who have perfect footwork in the pocket, like, unless you're those guys, you're going to start getting jittery. You're going to break contain early. You're going to put yourself in bad positions. And that very clearly happened with Dungy in this game. So, like, even the plays where the offensive line held up, like, the damage had already been done, which is an issue, and hopefully one that we can kind of avoid. But I do expect to see an uptick in blitzing. Or, in the Clemson and LSU case, like, they probably don't even need to. Like, they're going to overwhelm us with their 4-man rush.
Yeah, I think it's worth bringing up, unfortunately, the thing that you and I talked about a couple times during the summer and during the preview episode, and that is, like, Dan, do you glean anything from the fact that the defense seemed to hold the offense in check during the spring game now and the two scrimmages, and then definitely outplay them in the second game here?
I think the defense is better. it stinks to, like, this is the game that we discover this, but MTSU has, like, a really great wide receiver, a very solid quarterback. I know their running game is hurt, so that's not, fully functional, and it didn't really show in this game. But I think the defense is playing a good amount better than it did last year, and obviously I didn't want to, like, declare that after the CCSU game, but holding MTSU, and I know it was 30 points, but a lot of that, when Syracuse's offense isn't playing well, things are going to get ugly because they're, going to lose the ball very quickly. But I thought for the most part, like, this is one of the more encouraging defensive performances we've had the last 2 years. So I do think that unit's improved. I think there are issues with defending the deep throw is still a problem. I think the advanced stats bear that out. But the front seven is defending the run really well. And overall, I think it's just a solid uptick. And if the offense can get it going and the offensive line can develop during this season and mature and at least be, like, below average, I think we might have something. The problem is, I don't know that offensive lines come around at mid-year like that. I think that's, like, off-season progression is usually what you get with that unit.
Yeah, I don't really think that you see offensive line progression and offensive line maturity. Like, I mean, granted, like, Cervais is going to get better just because he is a freshman and he's somebody who is going to round into form by the end of the season. That's still not going to be a huge uptick. I think next year you'll see the benefits of this year for him. And probably the same for Sam Heckel, who was in his first, like, real meaningful action. But everybody else has been there. Like, Adams has been there for a couple of years. Conway has too. McGloster's redshirt senior. Like, these are all guys that should really have the position locked down, and I'm just not seeing it. And you know, again, this is not going to read too much into, like, practice and things like that, but the fact that they were getting kind of blown up during the offseason by, you know, what looks like a resurgent front seven probably should have given us at least a couple hints that things were going to be rougher around the edges than we thought. But, that again, that isn't to hit the panic button, though. Like, this is still – this team's going to have to figure out a couple things, and I think that's what we can kind of address for the rest of this half of the podcast before we get into the CMU game for the second half. Like, the three major issues – To me, the secondary, which I think can get better, between personnel moves, Cordy's eventual return. I think that the run game, I don't think Strickland and Neal can run the ball up the middle anymore. I don't think that's something that ever really worked, and it's worked even less this year. And then we need an option over the top. And whether that's Steve Ishmael or whether that's Devin Butler or Jamal Custis, if he's healthy, like, we need an option to be able to throw to who's going to be able to catch the ball. I think, you know, you look at Dungy's performance against Middle Tennessee, and while a lot of people panned it and a lot of people had a lot of negative things to say about it, and there were some negative things about it, like, there were two or three drop balls, past 20, 25 yards. Like, if those connect, A, we win the game, and B, you know, Dungy has a much more impressive stat line. No, it's not going to be, you know, like an all-world 350-yard, 400-yard performance, but, you know, Dungy put the ball where it needed to be more often than not. There were eight drops from my count. Like, that's, to me, that's unacceptable, and that's the type of thing where, like, you hope that it's just a one-week blip and it's a one-week issue, because if it isn't, then the crux of the entire offense, I think, is screwed.
Yeah, I mean, for everything else, like the offensive line play, the giant hits on Dungy, the running game again. Like, I think if the run game shows up in a game, I think we applaud it as an unexpected surprise at this point. I don't even know how much more we can say about it. It's the same every week.
Well, the tank was different this week.
The tank was different, and I appreciate that. I appreciate they're trying stuff, like. It does seem like we're breaking out new wrinkles, and eventually maybe something will stick as, you know, something.
I don't think the power eye works with this scheme.
It's definitely not in fitting with, like, what we're doing as a whole, but I appreciate they're trying to, like, duct tape something together.
Right.
In terms of, you know, just keeping the defense honest. Obviously, that's harder to do when you're having to switch formation and switch personnel. But overall, like, I think, honestly, the drops, like, might have, if not for eight drops, including some huge ones, like, we might have pulled this game out, even if we just fixed that. And that's not a thing we've really had. Obviously, like, Irv has had drop problems in the past, and, like, a couple guys have had, like, games where they've dropped passes, but I don't remember us having,
like, a widespread
widespread drop issue outside of maybe the Wake Forest game last year, which I discount as a football game because of the rain. It was so ridiculous. So I don't know that that's going to be like a long-term worry, just because it could have been just a one-off thing, but that's another example. Like, that was one of the most frustrating things to me, because I knew the offensive line was bad. I knew the running game was bad. I knew that we could get beat deep over the top, and we held that off until the end when they hit that one touchdown. Honestly, like, I thought the defensive backs, while they're not great, I think they've been improved somewhat. But the drops, just like, that's not part of our, that's not one of our issues. And oh my God, it was so pervasive in this game.
Oh yeah, it played a major role. And then that was kind of what I was getting to earlier too. Like, as much as I was annoyed watching the game a second time, as much as I didn't want to watch the game a second time, especially on Watch ESPN, a god-awful service that was terrible on game day this week and then was even worse trying to rewatch anything because it crashed probably every 10 minutes. What I noticed was we really weren't that far away from winning this game. And, like, that's not – I know some people might not necessarily think it makes any sense for me to be looking on the bright side of a loss in particular, but, and I'm not just being a Dino apologist either. I called out the issues, you know, in the article on Twitter after the game, like all that, and here on this episode. But like, if this is Dino's worst day and we were still a couple drop passes from winning this game, or, you know, a couple pretty dirty hits on Dungy away from winning this game. Like, that's what I said after two, like the missed penalties on MTSU were aggravating and definitely played a major role. But to me, like, it was still Syracuse's, you know, unforced errors. It was the drops. It was, you know, some questionable time management at the end to a lesser extent. It was the fumble by Sean Riley, who has no business returning punts. You know, I wish we'd won the game, and I wish I could revisit that point now, but, you know, you and I talked about last week how Riley really doesn't have any business returning punts, and then that kind of, you know, bore itself out in game. I saw he's still number one on the depth chart, but I would not be surprised if Nakeem Johnson is manning that role, or at least somebody else on the team is manning that role this coming week.
Yeah, we definitely miss Brizzly, because we were so bad at punt returner for so long. And then we got like three awesome years, and now we're right back where we were, where it's all fair catches and the occasional ill-advised return for no yardage and risking muffs and fumbles.
But he's a great kick returner. He's a fantastic, very good, yeah, he's a better kick returner than Briz was.
Yeah, he's like a 29-yard return guy. That's great. Like, I'm totally with him doing that. Like, it's not like we have to, you know, and some guys are just better. They're two very, like, they seem similar. They're two very different situations. Like, you're in different spots. You have different alignments in front of you. Like, they're different skill sets. So keep him a kick returner. Have him do that every time. Let's find someone else who can, you know, occasionally get us 10 yards in the punt game. But, yeah, just overall, like, it's frustrating because if Syracuse had played, like, its C-plus game, they would have won. And it just it's hard to not see that, in especially this early in the year. If this had happened, like, week 8, you could, after, like, 7 weeks of, like, your average performance, then you know, maybe get over a little easier. But week 2, it I think it definitely inflates things too.
Yeah, it was interesting. I don't know if you saw Bill C's numbers about, like, the percentile that we performed on this one. 23rd percentile is not a performance that really going to get you a lot of wins.
It also feels high too.
It feels like
we performed under our 23rd percentile.
But I feel like that kind of, like, speaks to what I was saying earlier too. Like, we really weren't, as much as the loss sucked, we weren't really that far away from winning the game. And no, like, you know, almost doesn't really matter. But to me, for everyone hitting the panic button and lighting things on fire right now, like, that almost should at least be some sort of, like, temporary saving grace that, like, it's not like we got blown out like we did against Akron years back, or against Miami, Ohio, like we did years back, like, or the time that we struggled with Buffalo. Like the people making comparisons to Greg Robinson, like, could not be further off. I was there for Greg Robinson. I remember those feelings in those games, and you knew within the first 10 minutes you weren't winning. And that was kind of the end. Like, this was not that sort of game. Again, we could have won. We technically came up a yard short of being able to still extend that drive. Like, until Dino Babers gives me a reason to absolutely doubt what he's in the process of building, like, I'm not necessarily going to cast more shade than, hey, this, and this could probably get better. Let's see what we do next week and if we learn from it. Because, to be honest, if one of the biggest issues under Schaefer was that you saw an issue either in the middle of a game or in the middle of a season, and it never was corrected. It just sat there. I mean, case in point, replacing George McDonald halfway through the second season with Tim Lester, and then Lester felt like it wasn't worth installing a new offense for the last six games of the year, despite the fact that over the course of those six games, if we had won enough of them, we could have made a bowl game. Like, crap like that was one of the biggest issues of the Schaefer era. If we start to see, you know, Babers' team not adjust and not find what different ways to do things. I mean, last year showed that this team could change from week to week. The fact that Mahoney looked fairly terrible, you know, in his couple starts until he, you know, suddenly blew up against Pitt showed that this team could progress and learn and develop on the fly. You know, the adjustments they were able to make in various games midway through, like, Babers hasn't shown an ability to change, and I'm willing to give him a shot to change, and I don't understand why he's not being given that chance like every other coach has.
Yeah, I mean, even within Deems, like, I think we pretty much had it confirmed to us this game that Mahoney is a different package than Dunch.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, they're running completely different stuff, so, like, this coaching staff is, like, prepared to make changes and develop new things and do different things on the fly, and as you said, we saw some of it last year, so I am very much still taking the long view on this team and this coaching staff. Like, we were very thought out through our thoughts on Schaefer. Like, I don't think any of us were calling for Schaefer to be fired after year two.
No.
And there were much worse signs in year two. We were very much willing to let him, you know, bring in his second offense and see what, you know, what he could do. And instead he just hired Lester full time and that was a whole thing. And it didn't work out. But, like, I don't know why people, I get it in terms of, like, this team has not been competitive in now, you know, 4 years, but I don't get why people are so much quicker to dismiss Babers than they were even with Schaefer, who had pretty much shown midway through year three, hey, this is not working. This is done. Like, we're not going to recover here, versus Babers, where we are now having the first real blip of, like, worry here. And it's legitimate. It was a really bad game. We all admit, we all acknowledge that. We were all saying the same things on Twitter. But, like, it's almost like Babers is being blamed for the timeline that started with Schaefer. Like, he's...
I think he's being blamed for the timeline that started with Robinson.
well, that too. Like, people are also acting like the Dread Robinson years aren't still something. Like, those are the years that these kids were, like, children and were just learning what college football is, and none of them remember Syracuse being even decent, except for maybe a couple blips and a couple pinstripe bowls. So, yeah, it's still a process. Let's see it through. We are constantly updating, you know, our responses to how everything is going. And, like, obviously we are Syracuse fans first before any other coach. So, like, we're going to, you know, want what's best for the program. I don't know why people are freaking out after game two of year two here. But those same people will say, oh, maybe we should have given Schaefer another year. Because there was no evidence that that was going to ever be a good idea. So,
right.
Well, I don't know. People are overreact to losses, and I get that. So it probably shouldn't be too surprised about it, but it still is frustrating. And especially because, like, we are all sharing in the solo game frustration, but, like, you would hope people would calm down. It's not like we haven't been here before.
Exactly. And, like, honestly, like, this type of shit is how people get like how coaches want to leave. Like, this is some of this crap is why Marone wanted to leave. And, like, no, I don't have that from, like, a valid source necessarily. But, like, when you hear the murmurs about why Marone left and what he was sick and tired of, it's this crap. Like, it's not to tell people, like, oh, you're not allowed to complain, you're not allowed to talk, you're not allowed to whatever, unless you agree with me. Like, that's not what this is about. This is about the fact that we're not really. I don't know how much better this program can do in its current financial state in terms of hiring than Dino Babers. So accept that as a fan base and then don't give him a blank slate and let him just, you know, walk on water no matter what he does. But understand that if you don't give him the benefit of the doubt the way you gave every guy before him, then you're going to chase him out in the first middling Big Ten job that it comes calling. He's going
to
go.
And then it becomes infinitely harder to bring another coach here, because right. Programs do get that reputation. You do not want to be the program that coaches don't want to go to. And whether or not it's fair, like whether or not a firing is fair, coaches are always going to be more prone to trusting other coaches and to having those people's backs than they are the program that, you know, did right or wrong by them. So I think most people would get why Scott Schaefer was fired from the outside. With Dino Babers, like, if and I don't think there's any chance of this happening this year. I think Dino would probably lose out, and I don't think he would get fired. No. But, like, say Dino went 4-8 again and Syracuse were to fire him, what the hell is another coach going to think? Like, oh, you want me to come in and, what, make a bowl right away with a roster I didn't build?
In front of 20,000 fans.
Yeah, in front of, like, probably 18,000 fans. So, yeah, let's see this through. Let's see what happens with Central Michigan. Who knows, like, what that team even is. Like, they just beat Kansas, but everyone beats Kansas. It's just, like, I get the frustration, but, like, we can't just freak out. Because, like, what if we had freaked out when Marone lost that stupid Louisville game his first year? Like, if we wanted to fire coaches, like, Marone's team gave up a bowl chance because they lost 10-9 at Louisville, a team that, like, I don't even know if they had positive yardage in that game. And, you know, here we are. So, or they got blown out by Pitt in year two, 45-14, and wound up going to the Pinstripe Bowl. So, let's see what happens here for a couple weeks. And, you know, hopefully no one gets murdered at LSU.
I would agree. And with that, we're at halftime. So, Dan, what have you been drinking?
Let me see. I had some Fat Tire last night, which I don't think I checked into, but it was, you know, it was Fat Tire, so it wasn't, like, anything too crazy. The only other thing, I had more Dales for Harvey Relief, because I was doing my duty as a Patriot, and I had a couple different things from Brooklyn Mitz Pack, including the Sriracha Ace, which is, again, still now in bottles, which is nice, and there were a couple others I have to check into. I did a poor job maintaining my Untappd, but it was mostly Brooklyn and then those couple other things. Not a huge week.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've been trying to preserve my liver for New Orleans next week, so I've definitely been taking it easy. Had some Little Bo pills from Smog City. Had the last of the Critical Band New England IPA from Modern Times that I had. Picked up a 6-pack of the Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest, which is pretty good. Had a Bishop's Barrel number 17 from St. Arnold, and then had from Fulton Beer a Worthy Adversary Imperial Russian Stout. Nice coffee and chocolate notes on that one. So, said nothing crazy. Probably won't be anything crazy this weekend either, because I feel like for my own health and well-being and the success of the week, I do need to keep things as light as possible. That when I get down to Louisiana and eat terrible food and drink a lot, that I don't die.
Yes, good luck. That is officially a night game now, right?
It is officially a night game. It either be at 7 or 7:30 Eastern.
Oh, baby.
I'm very, because you know what? I knew we were going to lose, so my thing is, like, if we're going to lose, I want to lose, like, with the experience attached to it.
Yeah, I mean, you're going down there for the experience of going to an LSU football game, and now an LSU night game, which is, like, one of the, like, hallowed right. Events of the college football landscape. So I'm quite jealous, and hopefully everyone gets out alive and has a good time.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it and chatting with the guys from the LSU blog. They do a really great job with their tailgate and everything, so hoping to join up with them in the many hours beforehand for some beers, and which should be a lot of roasted animals and many other assorted meats and other foods that I'm, again, very excited about. I feel like Syracuse it's not that they're bad at tailgating, but SU definitely doesn't do as great of a job as places in the South. My experience in California also wasn't that great with regard to tailgating. So being able to enjoy a real SEC tailgate will definitely be a nice experience to be able to check off along with the LSU night game.
Yeah, I imagine it's going to be just absolutely wild. And I'm sure the LSU fans will, like, kind of get a kick out of having, you know, Syracuse fans of all people down there. So I'm sure they'll be pretty hospitable overall.
Southern hospitality is real, man.
It truly is.
I mean, they might talk shit about you behind your back, but
no, definitely that too.
Yeah, but they are super nice to your face. As we I think that's why, not to go down this rabbit hole, but I think that's why we have had issues with some of our ACC brethren, because the way Northeasterners deal with people they don't like is they just call them out to their face. The way Southerners deal with people they don't like is they're nice to their face and they talk about it behind their back. And that creates a little bit of conflict of culture that I feel like boils up here and there between us and maybe a little bit of Pitt and some BC with everybody else.
Yeah, I buy that. It's just like a huge culture clash, and you know, some people take more exception to it than others.
This is true. All right. So next week, or this week, I guess, whatever you want to call it, facing Central Michigan. Central Michigan is 2-0. Rhode Island took them to 3 overtimes in game 1. In game 2, they ran all over Kansas in Lawrence. They won by a couple scores. And I was getting worried, and I still am a little worried. However, Corey Willis is out for CMU, and it looks like their second or third leading receiver is also out. So a largely one-dimensional offense now has to do without its top receiving options, which to me, and again, after last week, I don't think anything's guaranteed, but I do feel better about our chances since our biggest weakness on the defensive end, at least, is the secondary, which now has at least a little bit easier of a time stopping this passing attack.
Yeah, and also, like, while this team just beat Kansas on the road, again, Kansas
sucks.
Kansas is so bad, and I honestly, like, thought they might get better this year where they would, like, handle their business in the non-conference. Nope. The year before that, the week before that, Central Michigan was taken to 3 overtimes by Rhode Island, so not exactly the, you know, cleanest 2-0 start for anyone.
I mean, I'll take it, though, at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been there.
3-0, 24 years.
But I'm not super confident that Central Michigan is, like, some, you know, secret barnstormer here. They were picked, to finish, like, in the, like, 9 or 10 range of the conference preseason. They're hanging around the 90s of the S&P. I'm looking at their bot stores right now. Like, they're not putting up hugely efficient attacks. So
that said, Shane Morris is very good.
Yes, Shane Morris is quite good. He did play at Michigan, but I'm less worried about this game than I was about MTSU, and even the MTSU game doesn't like change what I feel about this game. I don't think. I think they're different things.
Yeah, I think there's also like just like there was a revenge factor for MTSU last week, even if it was just based on Scott Schaefer being his like himself and. We're not even talking about the cigar because that's a whole nother nonsensical conversation that I decided not to write an article about just because I didn't think I'd be able to like, keep myself in check. But the revenge factor here is Eric Dungy. For those who may have forgotten, the first time we saw how kind of easily crumbleable, I guess, Eric Dungy is, was in this game 2 years ago. When Mitch Stanizek, who has kind of shifted between linebacker and defensive end for CMU, had a viciously dirty hit, probably one of like the nastiest, like filthiest hits I've ever seen on like a defenseless player. The MAC decided not to punish him. I still think part of that was because of the Toledo game from a few years before then, but I digress. Stanizek is now like a reserve, so you're not really going to see much of him, but Dungy knows what happened that game. I think there's a lot of other players on this team that know what happened in that game because a lot of those guys were freshmen at the time. I feel like there's going to be a decent amount of retribution that Dungy in particular is looking for, and obviously like we hope it doesn't mean he's going to take unnecessary risks again, but I do think that he's going to be playing with a fire that maybe he just... For some reason, him and a lot of other guys in the team just weren't this past week.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what MTSU did with a, you know, reason to get amped up. So, if Dungy's ever going to have one against a MAC school, it's definitely against Central Michigan, for sure, based on that hit and how that whole game played out. Really kind of changed it. It kind of set the tone for, like, the weirdness that it has been Dungy's career. That was, like, the first game where he really took a huge hit. And it was still the worst one, and now we have all these concerns every time he, like, looks like he might run. and it started there. So hopefully he does channel it in terms of like his play, but not his
demeanor.
Recklessness. Yeah, we don't need him going out to try to run for 200 yards and taking headshots every time he breaks contains. So, but if he wants to go over the 400 yards and not take any shots and win back half the fan base, that'd be good too. I'd take that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that seem to be calling for like a blowout here to like redeem the team and like get everybody back into it. To me, if you beat this, if you cover the spread, I think you've done more than your job in this game, and that's even taking the injuries into account and everything else. I think CMU is still a good program despite the fact they lost some talent from last year, including longtime quarterback Cooper Rush. But like, I just, and again, I'm not like bagging on the fan base some more, but it's just I see all these opinions already, like. Of like, oh, we better win by 20, or else, like, or else what? Or else you're gonna stop going to games. You already stopped going to games. Like if we win by 10 or we win by 20, we still won the game. And like, again, CMU is one of the better established MAC programs. Like, this team's a work in progress. They don't have an offensive line. There's a lot of other issues, but they have enough pieces to be able to pull something together, and should be able to pull something together against the Chips. So. To me, I'm just hoping for a win, and anything that happens on top of that is gravy in my book.
Yeah, I think at this point, we just need to pick up wins. Like, that is by far the most important thing. Style points are nice, and, inevitably, if this team starts clicking, you will get them, because there will be programs that are just not equipped to deal with our tempo. I don't know that such a mission would be one of them, and they do have some interesting players. Shane Morris definitely headlines them. He was a Big 12 quarterback or Big 10 quarterback at one point, not a hugely successful one, but he's having a nice start to the year with 8 yards in attempts, 6 touchdowns, 1 pick, good numbers so far. So I think I agree with everything you said. Like, if we win by 10 points, if we cover the spread, win by 12 or something, I'd be thrilled with that. After last week, I think we can kind of cross out like, oh, let's beat every non-conference team by 28 points. Like, that's not realistic yet. We need to ease our way there.
That said, you see that stupid, what was it? McMurphy tweeted it today about that Syracuse and Pitt are the only teams in the last, 27 years. And, like, of course, myself and you and Sean and anybody else who has any sense, laughed about it. And, I wonder what caused this. And then I had some fans telling me that the national exposure was still the most important thing, despite 15 years of contrary evidence.
Yes, neutral fans talk glowingly of our somewhat close loss to USC at MetLife in 2012. They just bring it up all the time.
Oh man, remember that time the Syracuse lost to Clemson by 10? That was a blast.
How about when Mahoney, didn't almost beat LSU, but almost kept it close against LSU, like where ESPN cut to the game a couple times in the middle and say, oh, what's happened at the Dome? People talk about that. They will talk about that for years to come.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing more valuable to a recruit than seeing Syracuse get their ass kicked against Washington on national television.
Multiple times.
Christ.
Or even the big wins, the Missouri win. I mean, I think...
Which wasn't even intentional. Like.
Yes, which I think every child between the ages of... 15 and 19 remembers when it was on like ESPNU probably.
Yeah, that game in particular was ESPNU was a throwaway. Missouri was not that good that year, and on top of that,
Sheldon Richardson was suspended.
He was, which is the only reason we won. But the fact that like that game wasn't scheduled as part of Doc Gross's like big brand plans, like that was because
West Virginia screwed us over.
That's because we got screwed over from a scheduling standpoint, and we had to schedule somebody else.
And even then, like, none of those games, I don't think, have had great long-term repercussions for our program. Like, we've just got losses, and maybe we allegedly got paid a lot of money for some of them. We still don't know how much or have any real details beyond that, but we're going to take people's word for it, sure. But that was it. So yeah, and as fans, we didn't get paid for those games like the team did, which is nice, and I hope they continue to get paid for games. But I don't think we were like sticking cash in the pockets of you know, Leaf Raker Y down up in Cicero, who, you know, hasn't gone to the Dome since 2008, but will complain every time the attendance is bad.
Got a feeling Dr. Gross took home quite a bit of that money.
You might have.
Sneaky suspicion. Before we move on from the Central Michigan game for good, one more note. Central Michigan is the 110th ranked pass defense in the country right now, which is, to me, a positive. I like that. I like to hear that, the things like that.
That's better than the alternative.
Yeah, that's much better than the alternative. And to be honest, since we can segue out shortly, if we want to schedule Baylor now, I think we can go ahead and do that.
Can we get him, like, in 2 weeks?
Like, right now?
Can we swap them for LSU and, like...
Oh, I don't want to go back to Waco. There's nothing to do there. You can go to the...
I'm sorry, John. I'm just trying to do what's best for the program here.
I mean, if LSU wants to face somebody else... If LSU wants to face somebody else, I'll still go to that game.
Yeah, you can still just go to the LSU game. They can play... We can probably get Liberty involved here. Like, they can... They'll probably do whatever Baylor wants. I am now looking at Central Michigan's advanced profile. Havoc rate, very low.
Oh, well, that's good.
DB havoc rate, quite high. I'm not as worried about that.
Yeah, I'm not going to get too worried about that part of it. I am going to, especially because I feel like havoc rate for a DB doesn't necessarily impact the line of scrimmage much, and that's where we're going to complete like 75% of our passes.
No, what is the, I forget, I used to calculate this myself, but I forget what the DB portion of it is.
I thought it was just like ball disruption, like in the air, or...
Yeah, I think that might be it. Pass breakup. Yeah. So I don't think when I was calculating it, I don't think Bill was breaking it down by position like this.
Right. Yeah, so like to me, like if they're not going to create much havoc at the line, then Dungy... Like if you give Dungy time to throw, he's gonna throw 300 yards and change. If you don't give him time to throw, then we get some wild cards in there.
Yeah. I feel pretty good about this one. Obviously, last week is concerning, but I still, you know, I think we should handle our business here. If not, then... I'm not looking forward to next week's podcast.
Ew. All right, then before we, you know, move on to just some general college football jokes and garbage, what's your prediction here?
I'm going to take Syracuse to bounce back. I'm going to go with a 31 to 19, kind of a weird score win at the Dome.
All right. I'm going to go with... I'm feeling 38 to 24.
Okay, I think that's I buy that too.
Yeah,
I would take any of that.
Maybe it happens. Hopefully, it happens. But nonetheless, I am crossing my fingers for a win. We could really use one. Couple things before we leave. First, we'll get to, you know, some laughing at a team, and then we'll move on to a team that almost pulled off a nice win. Baylor, as mentioned, 0-2. They are garbage. I like Matt Rhule, but I think he might be in over his head down there because Baylor's not done dealing with what's going to happen to them from an NCAA standpoint.
Yeah, I think he knew. I don't know if he knew that he was going to lose two really, really winnable games early on. I do think he probably knew this was a long-term project because of all the departures they had and the possibility of coming NCAA stuff, which, you know, who knows.
But like the short term is the troubling part now.
Yeah. The thing is, he was given such a nice deal to take that job. I think they're going to stick with him for as long as he needs in all likelihood. And he deserves that because he's been a very good coach. Rhule, I just think that there was probably a huge transition from what they were used to with Briles in terms of on-the-field stuff. I haven't watched Baylor play yet this year, so I don't really know what their offensive looks like or, you know, basically what's going on with them at all. I've just, like, looked at box scores. But, yeah, I think there was clearly an adjustment here that was probably bigger than anyone could have foreseen because losing to Liberty and UTSA is just brutal. That being said, as much as I like Matt Rhule as a coach, and I don't think he really deserves any ill will for even taking the job. Like, I think you kind of have to do what you have to do.
Baylor deserves all the ill will.
Bill Baylor, I'm totally fine with Baylor losing. Like, I feel bad for Matt, but, like, sorry, man. Like, you got yourself into this, too. I'm not going to begrudge you for taking it, but I'm not going to root for you because you did it, so.
Yeah, you could have enjoyed Temple and just been everybody's, like, favorite G5 coach. And
he could have been, you know, Willie Taggart, like, a year later.
Could have been.
He's dead and paid, so good for him.
Yep. Another team that's not Syracuse we're going to talk about, Tulane. The angry way of themselves. They almost upset Navy. And I don't know if that says that Tulane is on their way on the upswing or if Navy's on their way down. Tulane actually outrushed Navy. This game must have been unwatchable. Tulane had 205 yards on the ground and Navy only had 194.
That is pretty surprising. We were saying before the show here, like, that must have been a wild game to watch considering the double, triple option battle there. I don't even know. I mean, I guess we get like, do we even get that many, like, Navy-Georgia Tech games? I don't think we do. Like, how often do we get a matchup like this?
Not, I mean, Army and Navy.
Army, Navy, yeah, okay, that was the obvious
answer. And I guess the Air Force games.
We get it every year with Army, Navy. Air Force runs, not the same thing, yeah. But, like, they have a kind of more of a spread, more of a true spread option attack. So yeah, we get this game every single year, very famously. Outside of Army Navy, I don't think we get something like this that much because there's only like five or six programs that really run this kind of system.
Yeah, and I mean it's interesting for Tulane to take this up. I think Tulane, you know, the comparison between Tulane and Syracuse shouldn't be discounted from the standpoint of like limited resources and like you're a private school and you're kind of between a rock and a hard place. Like Tulane is the advantage of being in a talent hotbed, but they're also dwarfed by, you know, LSU and a lot of other programs in the region. Like Tulane's taking an interesting tact toward being successful. This might work. I mean based on the early results here in year two, it seems like it's quicker to being on its way to working than maybe people thought. If Tulane can be competitive in the American Athletic Conference West, I'd say that's pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of great programs there. You got Tulsa, Houston, and Navy, in particular. SMU is rising. Like, that's a great – and Memphis, sorry. Like, that's a really – if Tulane is good enough to make a bowl, then you're looking at a really, really stout 1-6 in that division. And maybe that's what stops Tulane from really rising, you know, further than 6-6, 7-5. But at the same time, like, I think that this is some nice progress for Tulane early on. But, you know, moral victories, you can only take those so far. So we'll see if they turn them into actual victories. But I wish I'd been able to spend more time with this one over the weekend. I would have definitely liked to see Tulane in action with the angry wave and all.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I do wonder what Tulane's long-term prospects are because it's interesting that they are like one of the very few Louisiana schools right there, right in New Orleans, which is such a hotbed. Obviously, ULM and ULL are both there too, in the general area. But that like Louisiana is pretty unpicked overall, especially like when you get sub LSU level. Obviously, like schools like Ole Miss will go in there, and I think Memphis goes down there a decent amount, but. There's so much talent in that area and only one true powerhouse in the state. Like you would think that Tulane would have access to some interesting players, which then you could get into like a Georgia Tech type conundrum, although I don't think it's quite as dire considering they are an AAC school and they're trying to make themselves stand out. But I overall channel a lot of other people where I kind of hope that even if it's not my favorite brand of football, like I like seeing different looks. I don't want to see every school take up like the Art Briles offense, even if ours did. I mean, part of the reason I love college football is because there are such a distinct set of styles across the landscape. So the more, you know, getting a couple more triple option teams, I think would be pretty cool overall for the sport. And I do hope Tulane succeeds with it.
Agreed. And not just for our usual reasons with Tulane. Dan, anything else you wanted to cover here, whether that's Syracuse or otherwise, before we hop off?
Nothing specifically. I hope everyone enjoyed the weekend overall last week. I mean, college football, aside from Syracuse, is awesome. Like,
Evening slate, Washington State.
Yeah, my friend, good friend from Syracuse, Stephen Brown, was calling that game. One of his first big assignments, which he got because of some storm-related issues in Florida. And man, he got a good one. Like that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I wrote about Wazoo went up this morning actually over the comeback. I was talking about Tyler Helinski, the sophomore who came in for Luke Falk. Definitely, while he didn't like, you know, completely toss over the apple cart, I think you're starting to see the inklings of maybe a quarterback controversy for Mike Leach. So I think we see what Falk can do against Oregon State this weekend. And if for some reason, you know, he has a rough first half, I think you might see Helinski jump in, which is ironic considering Falk just broke the Wazoo passing record for a career yardage, like in the first half last week before he was benched for maybe injury reasons and maybe not.
It's interesting to see like more and more of coaches like willing to jump off of senior quarterbacks who are well established. Like obviously that's an issue in Ohio State now with a lot of people, notably like and strangely recruits for some reason, saying that they should get away from JT Barrett. Which,
there's
like,
no way that like Meyer didn't like send that to them to send out.
Yeah, it's strange. But I think there's like a weird thing too, like being more free to bench a senior quarterback because they're gone after a couple more games versus like if it's a junior or a sophomore, it's harder. But at the same time, it's like it's bizarre to see this pop up in like a couple different places. Wazoo is obviously not like the biggest program, but Falk's been very good there, and they've, you know, he's been instrumental in their like resurgence here. So to see that's pretty weird. But at the same time, like I guess I trust Mike Leach with quarterback related things.
Yeah, I think if there's a coach that I would trust with matters of passers, I feel like he's one of the few on the short list.
Yeah, he's coached a few of them.
Indeed, indeed. All right, I think we're good. We both think Syracuse is going to win. Hopefully we're proven right. If not, we're still going to have the podcast next week. I'm not going to be happy about it, and neither is anyone listening.
Yeah, hopefully it's a little more uplifting than this one.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. Well, Dan, thanks as always. Much obliged.
Yes, thank you for having me, and let's pick a win. I don't want to do the whole like having to reexamine our you know fan base type thing again. Let's save that for one more for next year.
Same here. Yeah, so that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever other service you use. And go Orange. Please get a win, and don't piss everybody off.
Go Orange.